We'll move now to Appeal 25-2123, Nicola Bybaj v. U.S. Foods, Inc. We're going to begin with oral argument, Mr. Mora, from you.
Thank you, Your Honors, all of you. May it please the Court, it's a privilege to be here and have the opportunity to discuss this case with all of you. So what happened here? Mr. Javi Bulin, who I will now call Chef Javi from here on.
That's fine, thank you.
I'm not sure I said it right the first time. He's a chef in Michigan, fairly well known. Over the course of years, he had lots of interface with U.S. Foods, buying food and other products, meeting many of the executives of the company. At some point, just because of their interactions over the years, he learned that U.S. Foods, one of the largest companies, of course, in the industry, was looking for new vendors for certain non-food products, including wastebasket liners and rubber gloves. Chef Javi knew a lot of the vendors, overseas vendors. He thought he could get a much better price from them to U.S. Foods. And U.S. Foods said, go for it, and if you succeed, we'll pay you a significant commission for our savings. That is the allegation in Chef Javi's complaint in the district court. And he says that he provided that information in writing, that U.S. Foods went on to use the information, saving tons of money, but refused to pay him. That was the allegations in the complaint. U.S. Foods, the defendant, reasonably filed a motion to dismiss the claim, and the district court ruled against them, at least to the extent that they said that Chef Javi had triable claims under several legal theories, including breach of contract and promissory estoppel. From that point, the case went on in a very normal fashion, some arguments, disputes on discovery, etc., until August of 2023. There were some disputes. Chef Javi thought that U.S. Foods was slow walking the production of documents, but pretty normal stuff. I was local counsel at that time for working for Stephen Biss, a Virginia attorney, who was the primary counsel doing all the work. So my discussions were with him, and I talked to him all the time over a course of several years until late summer of 2023, and suddenly I couldn't find him. I sent him emails constantly. I called him over and over and over again and got nothing, and this was not like the history I had experienced for several years since we filed the complaint. I couldn't imagine what had happened, and my imagination was a lot less from what actually happened, as we found out. In late October, not knowing what to do, I resigned from the case. I never even thought of a illness. I thought perhaps I was being fired sub silentio, or that Mr. Biss and Chef Javi had had some kind of dispute of which I was not aware. And the court accepted my resignation. U.S. Foods, not surprisingly, seeing no counsel at all, filed a motion to dismiss the case for want of prosecution. That was successful on November 7th, 2023. No one showed up for Chef Javi. They didn't know it. They didn't know it was happening. Nobody could get a hold of them, and especially Mr. Biss, to tell them what was going on. Motion to dismiss for want of prosecution in November of 23 was successful. And at that moment, our case was over. I didn't even really know it because I was no longer involved in the case. Shortly thereafter, Mr. Chef Javi's business partner, Jeff DeWeaver, sent a email or letter or letters to the court saying he had heard that Mr. Biss might have had a stroke.
So the business partner, DeWeaver, sends these items in, but he did not participate in either the motion or the appeal. Is that correct?
He didn't know. And he's never been a party to the case. So that was his involvement. Strangely, for some reason, his missives went to District Court Judge Guzman, who, in my judgment, should have sent the case over to Judge Durkin, who was the presiding judge in the case, but he didn't. And he sent a mostly non-constructive email back to Mr. DeWeaver saying there was nothing the court could do. Shortly thereafter, the word started to get around that Mr. Biss might have had a stroke. And Chef Javi hired a new attorney, Thomas Noonan, a Michigan lawyer. And that was in the fall of 23, shortly after the motion to dismiss was granted by the court. They immediately, the record shows this, started investigating. They did everything they could. Mr. Noonan called Virginia lawyers all over the place. Most had no idea what had happened, but a few, hearsay, said they had heard that Mr. Biss had a stroke. He was a fairly noted trial lawyer.
You're getting right now, Mr. Mora, to the key portions of the timeline.
Yes, sir.
Is that during that period of time, was there communication with Judge Durkin?
There was not. No.
Okay, because there's definitely a communication with Judge Durkin in November of 2024, when the 60B motion was filed.
We're still talking November of 23.
Right. But when the point that you're making is, I think you're just saying as a factual matter, Mr. Biss, Attorney Biss, went missing, basically. We didn't know what happened. It turns out that he unfortunately suffered a stroke.
Yes.
But there was no communication with Judge Durkin in that November, December, January timeframe.
That's correct.
Right, when it was learned.
That's correct.
And isn't that the issue at the end of the day that Judge Durkin had with all this? Like, hold on, what accounts for the nearly year-long delay in bringing this to my attention?
Well, I think the legal reason is that Mr. Noonan and Chef Javi were investigating. They didn't know what had happened either. There was no point in informing the court that something bad had happened. The most they knew most of that time was hearsay that Mr. Biss had a stroke, and even that was limited to that. There was no even hearsay evidence.
Wasn't it known by January of 2024?
I'm sorry.
The way that I pieced this together on the timeline was that by January of 2024, so a couple months after what you were focused on,
yes,
that the Michigan attorney Noonan learned that Mr. Biss had a stroke.
Yes.
And then there's still 11 months go by before that Rule 60 motion's filed.
Yes. Well, he did learn that there was a stroke, but even then, it was by January, nothing but hearsay. He had tried everything. He couldn't get into Mr. Biss's office. Mr. Biss did not have.
Yeah, the only point of my question is to say it seems like it may have been hearsay. We may not have known the exact condition of Mr. Biss, et cetera. But the moment that you learn in January that this fellow has had a stroke, it seems like that's the time to bring it to the district court's attention. And that's the explanation for why nobody showed up in November of 23, because he'd had a stroke.
Yes, I would argue, Your Honor, and I think this was the point of view of Mr. Noonan and Chef Javi following Mr. Noonan's direction, was that we didn't have anything like evidence at that point that we could bring to the court that would change anything. What we were looking for was evidence through which we could get the dismissal for want of prosecution reversed. We wanted to go back to the status quo ante, and we didn't have the information. We went to the state bar over and over again. All they would tell us was the matter was under seal. We did learn that there was a conservator receiver appointed, contacted them a thousand times. That's an exaggeration, of course, but mostly they wouldn't respond at all. Finally, in March, we were told, that is, Mr. Noonan was informed that by the receiver that Mr. Biss had suffered not only a stroke, but a incapacitating stroke, and that he could not communicate at that time with clients.
But thank you, Mr. Mora. We're going to give you a bit of rebuttal time then. You're at your time.
I'd prefer to go on if I might.
You've used up your 10 minutes. We'll now move to the other side. I'm going to give you a brief rebuttal afterwards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
We'll now move to argument on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the court, David Doyle on behalf of U.S. Foods. The issue before this court is a fairly simple one. Did the district court abuse its discretion in finding that the plaintiff did not bring his Rule 60 motion to vacate the court's order of dismissal within a, quote, reasonable time as required by Rule 60? This is a matter on which district courts are afforded so much deference that this court has described meeting the abuse of discretion standard to be a, quote, nearly insurmountable hurdle. Only if no reasonable person could agree with the district court's decision may it be disturbed. And here, plaintiff has not even come close to clearing that insurmountable hurdle. It is unclear from the record, and there is some confusion in some of the affidavits that were submitted here. It's unclear from the record exactly when the plaintiff knew that his lead counsel had suffered a stroke. But we know it was within a week of the judgment being entered. The judgment was entered in this case on November 7th, 2023. Based on an email that his former co-plaintiff, Jeff DeWeaver, sent to a clerk of this court, or the district court, by at least November 13th, 2023, 6 days after the judgment was entered, plaintiff knew that Mr. Biss had suffered a massive stroke. He used that phrase in his email, and he put it in bold font. And he was looking for guidance on how to get the case reinstated. That very next day, a lawyer from Michigan named Tom Noonan left me a voicemail, similarly indicating that he was going to do his best to get the case reinstated. He did not mention the stroke, but one can logically assume that he was acting at the behest of the plaintiffs in the case, and was reaching out to me, indicating that he was going to try to make efforts to reinstate them.
When you say in your brief, Mr. Doyle, I don't want to interrupt. I just want to make sure I got these parties straight. In your brief, you say plaintiff DeWeaver.
Yes.
He's a co-plaintiff along with Chef John.
That is correct, Your Honor. He's not moved forward with this appeal.
Yeah, okay.
But in the trial court, there were two plaintiffs.
I got it.
I referred to him as Chef John. It's Chef Javi, but
right.
And Jeff DeWeaver. Those were the two plaintiffs.
And did DeWeaver join in that motion?
Did not join the Rule 60 motion.
Did not. So he would have absented himself from the case before that motion.
It's unclear when he resolved in his mind that he didn't want to proceed after the judgment. I have no knowledge of when he made that decision or why. But at the time, and when he emailed the court, and it was Judge Guzman's clerk, and I have no explanation for why he chose to email a clerk for Judge Guzman, that obviously didn't do anything to put Judge Durkin on notice of what was going on. But in his email, he talks about, learning from my business partner today that Stephen S. Biss has had a massive stroke. So it's clear that Jeff DeWeaver learned on November 13th, 2023, 6 days after the judgment, about the stroke. When the plaintiff who's pursuing this appeal, Chef John or Chef Javi, when he knew, I don't know, but we have to assume that it's November 13th, 2023 or earlier. So the facts as presented through this appeal are even more favorable to U.S. Foods
Yeah, I'm just curious, but did you handle the case below?
I did.
Okay. So were there in-court proceedings with Judge Durkin before November of 2023? You would assume so. But in fact, were there?
No.
All on paper?
We didn't have motion practice about discovery. I produced documents to Mr. Biss. He produced documents to me.
No status conferences?
There were no... There,
I'm just trying to think of how in the world did this happen that Mr. DeWeaver thinks that Judge Guzman has his case.
That I can't explain. And I don't know if Mr.
It's not,
has
there's no fault that lies with Judge Guzman or his chambers. They got in... Courts don't dispense legal advice.
Correct. And that was the response that the clerk gave to Jeff DeWeaver in a subsequent email, I think it was November 17th, saying, please talk to a lawyer. I can't dispense legal advice to you. That's correct. And of course, Judge Durkin was never informed of any of this. So he certainly can't be faulted for not taking some kind of action.
Yeah, I just don't think the confusion at the end of the day matters that much either, because let's just suppose that in November or December, they realize we got a problem. We know showed for a trial due to a stroke of an attorney, unfortunately, sad situation that way. And they went ahead and filed their motion with Judge Guzman. At that point in time, Judge Guzman would have recognized that the motion is filed with the wrong judge and surely have transferred it over or brought to the attention. You need to file this with the assigned judge, Judge Durkin, but none of that happened.
None of that happened, Judge. What happened is discovery was closing and I was not getting a response from counsel. And I emailed and I called and I emailed and I called. And at one point I moved for an extension of discovery. I moved for a 1 month extension of discovery, explaining within the motion that I have no reason to believe that my opponent would disagree with this motion, but I've been unable to get a hold of that. Now, all that happened while Mr. Moore was still counsel of record. And I had discussions with him where I told him I was going to file a motion for Wanaka prosecution. I noticed up depositions of the plaintiffs for October 24th and October 25th, 2023. Nobody showed. And it was on October 24th, roughly 9 or 10 days before the judgment was entered in this case, that Mr. Moore withdrew from the case, citing, quote, irreconcilable issues with his clients. I've never known what those issues were, but I do take issue with what I believe to be an insinuation during counsel's argument that I waited until there were no lawyers left in the case before I filed this motion. I didn't strategically time the motion to dismiss because Mr. Moore withdrew. I informed him of what I intended to do and he withdrew, leaving his clients without representation and leaving Judge Durkin without a lawyer on the other side to speak to about this case. And Rule 37 allows a motion for wanton prosecution when people don't show for depositions. I tried my best to get a hold of opposing counsel. I made clear to the court that I was not able to reach opposing counsel. And I think Judge Durkin did the only thing he could at the time. Now, we jump a year forward. The Rule 60 motion was filed on November 7th. 2024, the last possible day under the rule that it could have been filed. But this court has been very clear that that's just the outer limit of when a Rule 60 motion may be filed. In reality, you're supposed to file it much, much earlier. And the timeliness of a Rule 60 motion, both parties actually agree, should be measured from the date upon which you understand or you realize the grounds for the motion. And here we have a situation where lawyers and clients knew that they could not get a hold of their lead lawyer for months. I actually took notes during Mr. Moore's argument. He said he talked to Biss all the time, suddenly couldn't find him, and he sent email after email. And Chef John said the same thing. So we have a distinct change in pattern where somebody has abruptly cut off communication. And then we learn, at least by November 13th, 2023, 6 days after the judgment, that he had a massive stroke. There is no more information that anyone would need to come running to court and say, wait a minute, we have a problem. I want to advance this case on the merits. Can we do something and vacate the judgment that you entered 6 days ago? That didn't happen. And we have a situation where plaintiff's position, based on their briefing, appears to be that before they could seek relief under Rule 60, They needed some type of ironclad documentary evidence of Mr. Biss's incapacity that would be admissible in a court of law. And there's just no authority that would support that position. As the district court wrote, and I'll quote briefly from page 5 of the order below, as soon as plaintiffs learned that Mr. Biss had been incapacitated, they should have informed the court and sought relief from the judgment. To the extent additional details were necessary to explain the failure to prosecute, and the court does not see what further detail was required, plaintiffs should have investigated those details only after informing the court and defendants that they still intended to continue to pursue the case. That analysis is spot on. That's what should have happened, and it didn't. Instead, the plaintiff sat on his rights, and there's a considerable body of authority in the Seventh Circuit on the timeliness of Rule 60 motions. And based on that body of authority, I would submit respectfully that you simply cannot consider the plaintiff in this case to have filed a Rule 60 motion within a reasonable time. And for that reason, if there are no further questions from the panel, I thank you for your time and consideration and request that the court affirm the sound decision of the district court below.
Thank you, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you.
Mr. Mora, we'll move back to you now with 2 minutes for rebuttal. You're welcome.
I'll skip ahead. The first time that it can be remotely said, maybe not remotely, but could reasonably be said that we should have informed the court was not until March. And even then, what we heard was hearsay when the receiver told us that not only had Mr. Biss suffered a stroke, it was a stroke that was incapacitating that made it impossible for him to communicate with his clients. And even then, it was semi-hearsay because they wouldn't give us a document to show this court. We wanted to be able to show whether or when Mr. Biss would be back in the case. We didn't think we had enough for this court to do, the district court to do anything short of that. We did not sleep on our rights. We continued investigating until finally, in a breach probably of its rules, the Virginia State Bar gave us a document that showed us officially that he was not able to practice law anymore and would never be back. And the defendants, quite understandably, used the words for this court that what we needed to do was be reasonable. And the district court, in dismissing our request to reinstate the case, mostly focused on that we didn't inform the court early enough. I think it's pretty reasonable to assume if we had filed what we learned in March, that the court would have said, you're right, go ahead. So the difference in this case maybe is the difference between March and October when we actually found out how bad the situation was. This is a unique, unbelievably deus ex machina kind of experience. I've been doing this for 58 years. I've never had a case like this. It's not just that he had an illness. We couldn't find him. It was as if the Artemis rocket had taken him and dumped him on the other side of the moon. And we did everything we could to try to find out what had happened. And so we know the rules of Rule 60, and reasonableness is certainly part of the issue. We probably clearly provided all of the other elements. And so what I would ask this court is, and this court, the Seventh Circuit, I've been in them, has a long history of looking at justice and fairness and sometimes overlooking some orders of court. The system will not be sullied if you overrule the present circumstance of this case. Justice, this is, as I say, a unbelievable.
Thank you, Mr. Mora. Thank you for your argument. Thank you, Mr. Doyle. The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.